The Scouted podcast is brought to you with the support of our friends at Skill Corner, whose tracking data and performance analytics are used by many of the top clubs, leagues, and federations around the world. Covering a wide range of global competitions, Skill Corner's data helps customers to make faster, better informed decisions in recruitment, player development, and strategy. And we are now using it to support our own analysis of up and coming talent. For more information, visit skillcorner.com. Hello, welcome back to the Scouted podcast. The European Championships and Copa America are in full swing, but what else has been happening during the summer of Scouted? Well, we've also been occupied with the transfer season, which already has thrown up quite a few interesting moves, accounting arrangements and tantalizing links. The purpose of this week's episode is to shine a light on some of the lesser known transfers that have already taken place this summer, rather than your Douglas Luiz to Juventus types. If you'd like some more of the mainstream stuff, though, on the Scouted Notebook, we have some excellent write-ups about Yankuba Minte swapping Newcastle for Brighton, a Scouted 50 profile on Spurs linked Desiree Doué at Rennes, the inside story on Benjamin Šeško of Slovenia, a comprehensive breakdown of the Villa-Juventus mega deal that I just touched on, which saw Samuel Illing Jr. and Enzo Barrenechea heading to Villa Park, and some truly excellent op-ed content on England's performance at the Euro so far from chief editor Tom Curran. And that's just the past fortnight or so. So plenty of stuff, plenty of bang for your buck as well. I'd also like to express our gratitude once again to Scouted's data partner, Skill Corner, as without their off-ball insights and data collection, it will make these types of episodes that you're about to listen to a great deal more arduous to research. But without further ado, onto the topic of interesting transfers, volume one of the summer. As always, I'm Joe Donoghue, and I'm joined by Lou Davies, Scouted analyst, designer, author of weekly newsletter Scout Notes, which you should all sign up for, the master of all trades, jack of none, if you will. Welcome back to the pod, mate.
Thanks. Good to be back. Excited to dig into some of these transfers and yeah, let's get to it.
Yeah, you mentioned in your latest Scout Notes piece that, you know, keeping the Transfermarkt latest transfers tab open has been an absolute must over the past couple of weeks since the window opened on the, or at least opened for most clubs on the 14th of June. And that was kind of the genesis of the idea for this week's episode, was, you know, we want to cover some of the deals that, you know, you may not have heard of that could potentially in what, 12, 18 months down the line, or, you know, I mean, even this season, could prove to be some interesting transfers. Lou, I'll let you get started because you've written about a few of these in Scout Notes previously. But it'd be good to get your thoughts over the airwaves on a couple of these lads.
Yeah, so I think there's only one place to start for me, and that's Peterborough United. They're one of my favourite clubs to follow in terms of the transfer market, in terms of across the whole season as well, because they have such a young team. Generally, they play really fun football. They play competitive football. They just missed out on promotion back to the Championship last season with, I think it was the second youngest team in the entire EFL. So that sort of gives you a snapshot of what the team's like. And it's built off recruitment, like these two transfers we're going to talk about now. So the first one is Chris Conclarke, perhaps the standout of the National League, the fifth tier English football last season at Altrincham. He racked up 35 goals and assists in 47 appearances, which straight away off the bat, that sticks out, that jumps off the page. But once you actually go and watch him, he's perhaps one of the most enjoyable players to watch that you will get a chance to watch. He's very small, very sharp, but his highlight reel of goals was pretty spectacular, scoring from all angles, all ranges, all sorts of techniques, free kicks, long shots, curlers into the top corner. You name it, he did it. And so this is a hallmark of what Peterborough United do as a club in terms of how they recruit. They've built up this unbelievable record of finding talent from the lower reaches of English football, from your League Ones, League Twos, National League and below. They dip into the Premier League academies from time to time as well to pick up those that fall through the net there. But on the whole, it's largely predicated on deals like Chris Conclarke. So for about 450k, I think, which is pretty hefty sum for a National League team anyway. And you can expect that there'll be a pretty chunky sell on in that as well. But yeah, I love this deal because it's just classic Peterborough. In terms of what he is now, he's a 22-year-old, so they're sort of expecting him to come in and make an impact straight away. He's not one of those that will take a season or two to bed in. This is a guy that's ready to come in. He has the talent, the pure technical talent to impact League One games next season, and I'm excited to see how it goes.
I think one of the things that I quite like about Chris Conn-Clark is that he doesn't look like a footballer, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And for anyone who's watched him, yes, he obviously does with his technical ability, and he's obviously very strong for his size. But you know, he doesn't immediately strike you as okay. You know, he's you know, extremely slender and taller than you'd imagine in real life. He does look like somebody who has scored a boatload of goals at a much lower level, and you get those especially around, you know, England, Scotland's lower leagues. But they never scale up. Peterborough, obviously, as you mentioned, are a really good club for that scalability, because they do offer these players, or these type of players, a platform. And I'll certainly be interested to see how he adapts to that higher level from the get-go, because as you say, he'll be going in right at the forefront at the first team, especially for that price point as well. Because I mean, for a League One club, that is it's quite substantial. You mentioned another of the young lads who's moved this summer from the National League in Scout Notes, and it's one I believe that we've discussed before on this podcast. It probably was about 12 months ago. And is it George Nevitt who's moved from Rochdale?
It is indeed. The ardent Scouted podcast listeners among you will know this name from the Scouted Emerging Generation episode that we did back in February. Was it February? Early February. We talked about the likes of Archie Gray, Lucas Bergvall, Warren Zairemri, Lamine Yamal in that one. And I managed to sneak in an 18-year-old Welshman who's playing for Rochdale. But now he's not playing for Rochdale, he's gone to Peterborough. And like another classic Peterborough move, they have pedigree, as we've just discussed, in finding these players and bringing them in. And but yeah, as we discussed it in that podcast that I just mentioned, Nevitt is interesting because at 17 and 18, he played a full season of National League football. Like, to do that at 17 and 18 in such a pressurized position like centre-back, he wasn't playing in a back three largely, he was playing in a back two as well. So he wasn't getting hid away. He was at the forefront, going up against strikers, big physical strikers, and direct teams that know how to play, that know how to turn the ball on teams, that know how to really drill down their physical and intensity advantage. So for Nevitt to do that at 17 and 18 and handle those minutes, not just handle those minutes, like impress in those minutes as well, is a good indicator. The blueprint for this deal is probably Ronnie Edwards. Peterborough got him a bit younger. They got him at, I think it was 16, coming out with Barnet Academy. But that's the blueprint for Nevitt to follow. Since he went to Peterborough, he's developed into one of the best young centre-backs in English football. It looks like he's going to Southampton in the next couple of days for a pretty measly fee, considering what his talent is. But yeah, I think that's the blueprint for Nevitt. In terms of what Nevitt is, he's a left-sided centre-back, so straight away that's a big advantage. That's something that jumps off the page, that jumps off the screen. He's quite big. He's perhaps not the most mobile yet, but I think with a bit more strength and conditioning stuff, he can add that little bit of nimbleness to his game. He has quality on the ball, composure under pressure. He can pick those passes through lines that can really set off attacks. There was one example of him doing it in the National League this past season that went viral on Twitter amongst these circles. But yeah, I think Nevitt is just a classic Peterborough. Like, you can't get any more Peterborough than this, really, apart from maybe Conn-Clark. So yeah, another exciting one. And obviously I'm biased because he's a Welsh under-19 international.
Yeah, certainly one that I hadn't heard of before you mentioned him earlier this year. But then as soon as I saw his name pop up in Scout Notes, it's like the light bulb going off again. And yeah, I mean, they do have the track record of providing these opportunities to players at Peterborough. And they play fun football as well. So I think, again, we'll probably see them at the top end of League One next season, even if they don't end up going up. But yeah, moving on to one of the players that I've picked out, and we've kind of gone for a bit of role reversal here. And I mean, Lou, you've got kind of a view on pretty much everything youth football, but you typically I'd look more at the domestic side of things, and you've got the lens on global. But I'm actually bringing back a player that you and I discussed fleetingly last August. I've actually got the WhatsApp message. The 12th of August last year, I sent you a message with Can Uzun's name, who was at the time at FC Nürnberg in Germany in the Zweite Bundesliga. He was 17 at the time. He'd just broken into the first team. I think he'd scored a couple of goals by that point. You replied to me with a meme appearing to mock me, suggesting that you had already come across him, which is very typical you. And you'd also said you'd not been able to watch him yet, but you're very keen to. So after I've kind of given the bullet points on Uzun, then I'd be interested to hear what you have to say on him. But he has moved from Nürnberg to Eintracht Frankfurt in the Bundesliga for 11 million euros, or reported 11 million euros, which seems a little on the low side considering what he achieved last season in his first full campaign for Nürnberg. 19 goals in 32 appearances, 16 of which were in the Zweite Bundesliga. Admittedly, yes, there were some penalties in there, but made his Turkey debut last year, I believe, or late last year, or maybe earlier in 2024. Not in a competitive match, though. So there's the potential that he could still represent Germany, given that is where he was born. And what's more impressive about Uzun's goal tally last season is that he's nominally an attacking midfielder, or sort of a second striker. And I mean, he'll be pushed for minutes in this Eintracht team, because they've got Fares Chaibi and Mario Götze in sort of that more, I don't know, you'd say more traditional attacking midfield role. And then at centre forward, you've got Omar Marmoush and Hugo Ekitike, who again are both, you know, I think 25 and 22 respectively. But Uzun is listed at 6'1" tall. I'd say that's probably an accurate description. He's a very high volume shooter, very accurate finisher, especially for his age, very composed. And while he's not the most involved in build-up or in terms of, you know, defensive work rate, he will get on the end of things, and he does so consistently, certainly on the basis of his first senior campaign with Nürnberg. One of the things that really, really stands out about him as well is that he's very, very successful at beating a man. You know, he does go past players, which is very, very exciting, because, you know, typically when you have finishers who aren't as involved in build-up, they're purely a final third merchant, if you will. But Uzun's not quite that player. He's very good at you know, take-ons, dribbles, that sort of thing. And yes, I mean, at 6'1", you'd maybe associate him with doing quite well in the air. And I mean, at his age, he's doing all right for that. Probably improves as he gains more experience. But on the whole, he's sort of my headline pick for a really interesting transfer because of the price point, because of his age, you know, still being 18 years old, and because of what he achieved last season.
Yeah, I've still not managed to watch quite enough of him to really speak about him. But I think, as you mentioned, his numbers jump off the page. I think if you go back through his FB Ref history, a couple of seasons ago in the under-17 Bundesliga, he scored 22 and 19. Last season, well, the season prior to last season, technically, he scored 15 and 15. And then he steps up straight into the Zweite Bundesliga and does 16 in 25 starts, 30 appearances. So to do that at his age is impressive. From what I have watched, I think he's that sort of classic German auxiliary attacker type. As you say, he's not very high volume, but he can get on the end of stuff. He can shift and shoot. He's that sort of late attacker that arrives a bit later from a bit deeper and gets around the box and just does what he does. I also like the move, like you do. I like the Eintracht Frankfurt as the next step for a lot of talent. I prefer it to perhaps moves like RB Leipzig or Bayern or even Borussia Dortmund, because Eintracht are in that sort of middle ground that isn't too pressurized, but it still has that competitive element and that all-round quality that can really push players to the next level. Like you, pretty keen on this one. Keen to watch more because I haven't watched all that much of him. And a nice little fact about him is that he was childhood friends with Kenan Yildiz. So who's now, well, he's like tearing up at Euros, but he is playing at the Euros. So yeah, that's a nice little tidbit on him.
He's tearing it up in terms of the discussions that are taking place in the scouted group chat whenever Turkey play. that's certainly where he's tearing it up. Uzun is definitely one to watch. Whether it, his scalability in terms of finishing and end product does translate to the top flight in Germany remains to be seen. But as you were mentioning there as well, Lou, the pedigree that he has from sort of under 17 and under 19 level does suggest that his stint in this Vita Bundesliga was not a fluke. And if he's given the minutes, if he's given the opportunity to get into a rhythm at Eintracht, then we could really be seeing something quite interesting, because they're a fun team to follow from afar. I think it's fair to say they've always done some very interesting business. And Uzun is basically the latest in that bunch. We'll go with my second pick of three before going to your final one, Lou. And that's Mohamed Fousseini, a Ghanaian forward who's moved from Sturm Graz in Austria to Union Saint-Gilloise, Union SG in Belgium, the cup winners there. And of course, the subject of a piece that I put together last summer on their recruitment. A very, very avant-garde left field club in terms of how they recruit. They're very unique. They've signed Fousseini for €2 million from Sturm Graz. Didn't really get a look in there in Austria, if I'm being honest. Was typically used as a very, very late substitute. But it's important to sort of caveat that with he is a Right to Dream graduate from the that academy in Ghana and, well, West Africa in general. Arrived in Europe, didn't really get that much of a look in, but went to Randers in Denmark on loan last season, started pretty much every game and demonstrated his quality in I'd say a similar level league to Belgium and the top flight that he's going into with USG. 9 goals in 16 appearances for Randers last season. Practically, those goals kept them in the league. When the Danish Super League game splits into two, the championship group and the relegation group, Fousseini got 8 goals in 10 of those games. So very, very impactful, and certainly what will have alerted USG to him. I mean, he will have been on their radar before that, given that he's a Right to Dream graduate. But yeah, I'd also anticipate that he's probably a direct replacement for Mohamed Amora, who will probably leave this summer. He had a fantastic year with USG in Brussels, and they are great at player trading. They routinely refresh the squad year on year. It's often, changes in the double figures. I mean, they changed manager last year. They brought Alexander Blessan in. They've reluctantly seen him move on to FC St. Pauli in Germany now. I don't foresee USG being any less of a force in Belgian football because of the structure behind behind the team and the management. Fousseini and similar to Amora, both very diminutive players, both very quick, both score in bunches. I think is a good pick to perhaps pop off in Belgium next year. Glue, you had something else to say about some USG business this summer.
Yeah, just to circle back on to Fousseini, I don't know much about him, but I think the point that you make in terms of that continuity that USG find within the market is a really pertinent one. Again, like you mentioned, this is the third summer now that they've had to change coach because the other one's been pinched or hasn't renewed the contract. Last season, I think they lost about 60% of their minutes from the season prior, and they still went on to have an historic season in some ways. It was their first cup win since, in maybe a century or something. Mm-hmm. They came close again to win the league. So to continually develop and keep getting better despite all these it's not a hardship, because I think USG encourage it in some ways to keep refreshing the squad like they are. But to keep doing what they're doing, to keep making that progress is really impressive, and it points to good process, as you went out to Brussels and found out from the men from the men themselves. So yeah, that's a pertinent point. But in terms of another one that USG have brought in this summer, again, another one that was completely off my radar. I'd never heard of him until I saw him yesterday when he popped up on the transfer market latest transfer screen. But once I clicked into him and I had a little look, well, straight away, as soon as you see USG signing a player, that's like a big, that's a big tick, basically. That's a big green flag. You're like, okay, who's this guy? I need to find out. So I dived into the details a bit deeper on Transfermarkt, and straight away, the stat lines were pinging off the page. Like, I was like, oh my God, who is this guy? So his name is Promise David. He's a 2001 born Canadian Nigerian striker. They've signed him from Kalju FC in Estonia for 400k, I think it is, for 400,000 euros. He's coming off the back of a pretty extraordinary season. He scored 23 and 21 for the first team this past season. The season prior to that, he scored 22 and 19 for the B team. So straight away, you're thinking, wow, that's really impressive. You can see why USG are taking a punt on someone like this. I think it gets even more interesting when you dig into his past career history. So he's a Canadian, but he's spent time in the NWSL, which is like the second division of American football, US football, basically. He then went to Croatia on loan, didn't quite stick it out there. He then ended up in Malta, where he scored a few goals, and that's where he then moved on to Estonia, and he's just exploded. Again, I dived a little bit deeper into him. I had a look on the Y-Scout. I had a look on his underlying data, and he's averaging something like 0.9 XG a game per 90. Sorry, he's putting up like 5+ dribbles. He's taking about 5 shots. So straight away, he's a standout in his league. And given how data-driven USG are, it's no surprise that they are picking up someone like him. I then dug a little bit deeper again. I had a look at some of his video that I have access to, and he's massive. Basically, he's really, really big. He's probably about 6'4", maybe 6'5". He's a striker. He likes to pin and roll players. He likes to get his back into players and roll and just beat players like that. He has the sort of Chido Obi-like ability to shift and shoot off in those smaller spaces. And obviously, once he gets his legs going, he's fast. So he's a threat into space. So yeah. Really interesting one. I knew nothing about him until yesterday. Now I'm speaking like I know everything about him, but I don't. So that's part of the discovery now, to see how he adapts from Estonian football, which isn't the highest level. I was watching some other players from Latvia recently, and I was thinking, oh, how does this guy translate? But that's all part of the fun, isn't it? That's what USG are paid to do, basically. So yeah, interesting one. Really keen to see how he does next season. And yeah, don't be surprised if they're selling him for 10 million. This time next year.
I cannot stress to anyone listening how much of a sentence I was watching a couple of players in Latvia is, how typical that is of you. Honestly, somebody hire this man to lead your scouting and recruitment department. But I'd say as well, the fact that you know, you were only just coming across, or rather you were alerting the rest of us to Promise David in the last couple of days, once USG had signed him, that's a huge endorsement for how they're doing business, because obviously they've clocked onto him even before yourself. So yeah, I mean, they do fantastic business. I mean, Cameron Puertas is someone who I imagine will definitely leave this summer, the Swiss international, probably making 10 times what they paid for him 2 summers ago from Lausanne, in Switzerland. So, yeah, they are an extremely, extremely well-run operation there. Should we go on to your final pick of the three? Oh no, did you mention you had a third, or am I making that up?
I do have a third, and I'm dipping back into the EFL. I'm big on my EFL. I'm big on the non-league stuff. So the pick that I'm going with is Charlie Webster. Might be familiar to some listeners as an ex-Chelsea Academy graduate. I think this one is interesting in a couple of ways, because he's still quite young. Last season, he was on loan at Heerenveen in the Eredivisie. So for him to drop down from the Eredivisie to Burton Albion in League One is a pretty aggressive move on his part. You don't really see those those decisions made this early in players' career. So fair play to him for that. I like him because, well, and you like him because I because you've watched him yourself in person. I like him because he's a very technical midfielder. He's pretty classic Chelsea in some ways, classic Chelsea Academy. Really technically sound. He can pass the ball. He can move with the ball. He can slip pressure. He has those sort of intangibles as well, which set him apart, which are pretty consistent of Cobham graduates. So he's a good player first and foremost, but I think it's interesting because it shows the value of hiring a manager or a head coach that has previous within these sort of youth circles. So Burton Albion have appointed Mark Robinson. He was Chelsea's under 21 head coach this past season, I think it was. So straight away, that gives you an in. I think we've seen it previously down the years. Steve Cooper is a prime example. If you get a coach that's worked at a high academy or junior international level, you can get some really good deals. Steve Cooper at Swansea City had the likes of Morgan Gibbs-White, Conor Gallagher, Mark Guéhi, top level Premier League players now. But for Swansea to have them on loan in the Championship is largely because of Cooper's influence. We saw it again recently this past winter with Ian Foster at Plymouth Argyle. That didn't work out for Foster for a couple of reasons, but straight away, as soon as he came in, he brought in Darko Giabi, who are the other ones? Lino Sousa, I think it was, and Alfie Devine with them. So it gives you that in to these top Premier League levels, and you can pick up some really good players. So the interesting thing about Webster, again, is he's gone down permanently. He isn't alone. I think Chelsea have let him go for free, but obviously they're retaining a percentage of the next deal that if he does go on and impress, as he probably should, if they make 4 or 5 million, they'll probably get 25-30% of it, I'm guessing. So, but I like this deal because Webster's taking ownership of his own career. He's not happy being sent out on loan. He wants to go and play football. And I like it because it's just another example of what you can get if you trust someone like Mark Robinson to come in and lead your club.
Yeah, absolutely spot on. And just to add a little bit extra in terms of what Webster's like as a player, I do think that League One will be a level which he's capable of doing very well in. I don't want to go too far and, you know, build him up too much and say he'll thrive there, because, you know, we've seen countless players go there who've done very, very well at you know, youth international level and PL2 level who've gone there, and just the club hasn't been the right fit. But I think with you know, making the point that Robinson is there and obviously having that pre-existing relationship on paper, at the very least, it looks as though it's a good move. He's also a very distinctive player. You know, you can't miss him on the pitch. He's got this long, shaggy hair, and he's just very active. You know, he gets around. He's exactly what you want in a central midfielder. He's very secure on the ball. He can, you know, he can add a goal. You know, technically very good, but above all, he's just very, very active. He's as you mentioned, you're the kind of the archetypal Cobham graduate in that position. You know, a little bit bigger than Lewis Bates, a little bit smaller than Conor Gallagher, but somewhere really, really nicely in the middle. And when I saw that move, I thought, okay, that was one which sort of raised the eyebrows, because they've given him a 3-year contract, which is a big endorsement for him, and a big endorsement in Robinson as well from the Burton Albion hierarchy. So we'll see how that one pans out, but yeah, in terms of League One transfers, there's certainly been a few in there. I also mistakenly said that was your last pick, which was wrong, because you said earlier that you actually had Con Clark, Nevitt, Webster, plus an other. No, this one's a complete mystery to me. Who's your other one?
And other, in this case, are just two clubs just to keep an eye on. So the first one is Sturm Graz. We've already spoken about them with Fusaini, but they won the league title, beating Red Bull Salzburg, which is pretty impressive in itself. But again, it's built off that bedrock of really sound recruitment, focusing on younger players, focusing on the loan market as well from Premier League clubs. They got Biereth and Okoronkwo from Arsenal in the past couple of seasons, and they went on to impress. Biereth played a pretty big role in their league title win. But they're doing some interesting stuff again. A couple of names to pick out from their recruitment so far is Tochi Chukwuani from Lyngby. He was an FC Nordsjælland graduate, he was meant to go to Hellas Verona, but they picked up on a heart condition in his medicals. So he went back to Denmark, put in a breakout season at Lyngby, and now Sturm Graz have picked him up for, I think, something about 500K. So that's an interesting one. And then there's another one then, Arjan Malic, who is a 18-year-old Slovenian sort of wide centre-back type. He can play centre-back, he can play right-back. He's that sort of in-between player that's pretty prominent in modern football. And he's interesting because he's played a full season of Zweite Liga football at SV Red this past season, and Sturm Graz have picked him up. So yeah, Sturm Graz doing good stuff. Keen to see how they build on their league title win. I don't expect them to splash the cash. I think they'll just stick to what they do. And yeah, that's sustainable for them. And then the other ones then are FC Midtjylland. So FC Midtjylland are big players in the youth football transfer scene. I think anyone that follows this sort of stuff will know the pedigree that Midtjylland have. I think they sort of lost their mojo a bit in the past, maybe 3-4 years. They started to dip into Brazil a bit more and it didn't really quite work out for them. They went a bit older then to try and get back to what they were. And yeah, I'm not sure what went wrong there, but there's signs now that they're coming back to what they were. And yeah, they're really focusing on the South American market. So I think that's pretty interesting in itself, just to see how different teams drill down in different areas of the world. So yeah, they've picked up Daniel Castillo from Shakhtar Donetsk. Obviously, that's not South America, but he is a South American. Yeah, he's highly rated within Ecuadorian football. He came out of LDU Quito's academy very young. He hardly played for the first team, but went straight to Shakhtar because of his pedigree at underage level. So they've picked him up for $4 million after a bit of a difficult time in Ukraine, and then a loan to Partizan in Serbia. They've also another point to pick up on with Midtjylland is they have a sister club in the Portuguese second division. They own CD Mafra. The last season, they sent quite a few academy players out there on loan, and they sort of use it as that sort of bridge step between some lesser leagues around the world. So they've picked up a player called Usman Diaw from there. He's coming off the back of a full season starting. He's another one of those sort of hybrid centre-back, right-backs. And there are similarities with him with Usman Diamande, who Midtjylland also had on the books before he went to CD Mafra, and then Sporting signed for $10 million. So they've got him in to try and keep him rather than losing to a Sporting. So yeah, two interesting clubs there to keep an eye on. And yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, that certainly was an other rather than another player. but no, I feel like we got bang for our buck there. And just finally, before we finish this week's episode, got my final pick. It's not one. No, it's not a player that I've seen, but it's a path which I feel like Udinese have gone with previously. Maybe not under the Pozzo ownership, but you know, from Chile, straight from Chilean football to Italy's Serie A. It's not a well-travelled route, but when you look at the likes of Alexis Sanchez, I feel like Arturo Vidal as well. May have been somebody who made that jump. But Damian Pizarro, 19-year-old centre-forward from Colo-Colo in the Chilean Premier League. He's gone finally to Udinese for €3.5 million. A transfer which was agreed back in January, was loaned back to Colo-Colo for the second half, or rather the first half of the 2024 season there. Got 5 goals in 13 appearances, building on, I think it was 6 goals that he'd had in 23 prior to that. At 19, he's already got over 2,000 senior minutes in just last season alone, over 50 first team appearances, and has really made the most of when he has been given starts in Chile. You know, he got a brace followed by a goal and another brace in three consecutive starts, only had 7 of those at the beginning of this year. Now joins Udinese. Won't be easy. They've also brought in Lorenzo Luca, who's that little bit older, 23, from Pisa as well, that costing a little bit extra as well. And they've also got, you know, the likes of Brenner, who obviously did very well in Brazil, went to MLS, has ended up at Udinese. Keenan Davis, formerly of Aston Villa, and Isaac Success, who was obviously at Watford, given the Udinese-Watford links. They've got them there as well. I don't know whether they'll keep all of those players. considering that there's five players kind of going into two positions there. But yeah, Pizarro is one who, I don't know, at his size, you know, at 19, he's already 6'2", and appears from sort of the YouTube scouting that I was able to do, as though he can put himself about a bit. Again, that is in the more transitional, less regimented Chilean football than compared to where he'll be coming into in Italy. But yeah, it's just one which jumped off the page when I was sort of going through that transfer market list.
Yeah, interesting. As you say, Udinese do have some pedigree in terms of finding these South Americans. You mentioned Arturo Vidal. I think I also thought it was Vidal that went via Udinese, but it was a bit early. I think David Pizarro was another one that started at Udinese before doing what he did in Serie A and latterly Manchester City.
Yeah.
You mentioned Alexis Sanchez, another prime example of what Udinese have done. But yeah, I don't know much about Damian Pizarro. I know the name. I've seen a couple of clips, but I can't really speak on him. But yeah, interesting one. And it'd be interesting just to see how he translates from that Chilean football into Serie A, or whether they try and place him out on loan somewhere for the second half of the upcoming season. I think that's probably perhaps the best play. Well, Serie A clubs like to use Serie B and Serie C for these sort of bedding in periods. So yeah, one to follow definitely.
Yeah, Pizarro will have played with Arturo Vidal. He's done the sort of one of the few things in modern football which is still romantic and going back to where it all began, as he's back at Colo-Colo as of earlier this year. So yeah, 37, Arturo Vidal. We are the passage of time waits for no one. We're all getting so much older. But
and he's still got that shit mohawk haircut.
Oh, come on, gotta give it up at some point, haven't you?
You're 37 year old.
Hey, if you can still have it at 37, then fair play. But yeah, thank you very much for joining me on this one, Lou. I think we'll do a couple more of these over the summer, considering that there will be more transfers to speak of and more under the radar transfers, and then you can shake a stick at or shake a mohawk at. And yeah. We'll get another one in the books shortly. But yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining me on this one. And hopefully you've heard something about some names that you might have heard a little bit about or hadn't heard of at all before. But yeah, in the meantime, bye for now. The Scouted podcast is brought to you with the support of our friends at Skill Corner, whose tracking data and performance analytics are used by many of the top clubs, leagues, and federations around the world. Covering a wide range of global competitions, Skill Corner's data helps customers to make faster, better informed decisions in recruitment, player development, and strategy. And we are now using it to support our own analysis of up and coming talent. For more information, visit skillcorner.com.